This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to, yeah, we're in season three of The Next Chapter presented by Baron Davis and Slick Studios. But yeah, Trey, fresh season, fresh start. We're going to shake things up just a little bit. As you just kind of mentioned, sometimes change can be really hard, but sometimes change is necessary. Sometimes it's important to kind of just like keep you on your toes and keep everybody on their toes. So obviously, I'm Prim, I am the host, but today I decided to invite some people in because, to be honest, Trey, it was getting a little lonely. So if you don't mind, I would love for you to just kind of join me in as being a wingman. So ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce to you Trey Edwards, a.k.a. Black Trey. So Trey, you and I go way back. I actually don't know how we met. I think it was through the Count the Dings basketball family, was it not?
Absolutely, yes. You did a live show, and then I met you that way. And also, you know, I know your husband too. So that's how it started. But then, yeah, I mean, from here and there, we've just been friends and kind of chime in from time to time. So
yeah, the Count the Dings family is very. It's a loving, awesome.
It's a revolving door too. It's a revolving door, you know. I mean, I'm gonna be honest, you know, like, you know, even how I met, you know, Maze. I met Maze through a friend, a mutual friend, and you know, Maze came to our live show, and that's how, you know, Maze and Jade kind of hit it off. And I look up and I'm like, ah, okay, there you go.
This works.
It just works, you know.
The rest is history. Well, you know what? Things were getting a little lonely. And Maze, no offense to you, my producer, but you know, Maze, you know, for this episode, I would love for you to reveal yourself, and you can unmic yourself too, because I think the thing that I enjoy when I have co-hosts and companies and producers chiming in is it feels like a community. And that's the one aspect that I've always loved about broadcasting. So not that I ever felt lonely when I was interviewing my guests, because I love doing that. I love the aspect of like they're enjoying to hearing about their narratives and storytelling and all that stuff. But, you know, a little consistency in community is really good. So I want people to get to know you first before we, you know, we'll see where this episode takes us. But original member of the Count the Ding squad, a member of the Bomb squad, the Black Opinions Matter Monday, a podcaster, contributor, NBA analyst at The Athletic, one of the creators of the NBA Bubble Life Twitter account. And you also work at Wieden and Kennedy right now.
Yes.
Right? So you got a lot of stuff going on.
And, I got a lot of stuff going on.
And I feel like there's this other, I don't really know how to introduce this into your resume. Why are your eyes getting all wide? Are you worried?
No, I'm interested. It's more curiosity. I mean, I get real shy when people talk about me in front of me.
You get shy?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, again, am I supposed to stick my chest out or like pound it? I don't know. I mean, I look at
it like. Yeah, you can do that.
People literally explain who I am in front of other people. And I think that's the weirdest thing ever. Like, I don't get it. I mean, maybe people get off on that of like, yeah, tell them more about me. Yeah, tell me more. But I've also seen people like that don't get the credit. I think I get a lot of credit. So I don't need people to like bullhorn what I do or that's this thing. It's just a normal, you know.
So I think the reason why it becomes maybe particularly uncomfortable is because, how do you set up somebody when a part of their, which you've tried to kind of, you kind of keep it on the DL and it's like your kind of secret life, but you roll in big circles, especially particularly with the NBA / basketball family. And so, I don't really know how to set you up with that, but maybe like connector or ultra connected.
I like that. One of my late friends, we joked about how important connectors are. You know what I mean? Like, Hovain Hilton was a big connector, and that was the trait that we would be like, oh, you know him. All right, we put you in a group chat. Now y'all get cool and just go about it that way. So like, I like the term connector of things, but like, definitely shouting out, rest in peace, Hovain Hilton. But he was like a point guard, and I was a point guard of mainly like putting people in the same room and creating good stuff. So
that is so interesting. That makes so much sense about why you and Ben, my husband, connect, because he too thinks through those same lens. Like he is a connector and likes to create good content, but particularly focuses on relationships and how people could really collaborate and do good things. So can I just ask you, so who are some people within your circle that you seem to be particularly tight with?
Man, that's a good question. In my circle, I don't think I have a circle. I think it's just like, because it's not like real tight knit. I think I'm a circle of one, honestly. I think everything else is like, you know how atoms are? Like it has like these little sticks going out of it. You know, we would make those projects. I think that's the external like circles that kind of web that way, because I'm involved in so many things. I got my hands in so many different, you know, things that's going on. But like, ideally, like, you know, I got like, you know, just again, it's just different people. You know what I mean? I have a friend that I'm still friends with for 20 years. I mean, I consider him my best friend. It's a guy named Donald. I wouldn't put a label on me and Kevin Durant's relationship, but I talk to him every day. Listener of the show, Maze knows Sarah Mahdi. I talk to her every day. Like, so I have different people that I literally talk to like hourly. You know what I mean? Like, it just depends on what it is. And I'm also a mentor to like different people in different, in different acts of life. You know what I mean? Like, I got someone that's working corporate that I mentor. I got a college student that I mentor. I got a rapper that I mentor. The list goes on. So
you're just all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the part of life, is just mainly just sharing and kind of helping others. You know what I mean? Like it's the real thing is being in service of others. Long as people don't abuse it, I think that's where it gets kind of out of control, when people be like, oh, I know he can help me, or I'm gonna just ring this out until this person can't help me anymore. Like, I think I try to stay away from those people. I'm pretty big on like not getting new people in my life. I don't like to add more.
Do you think that's an age thing? I do. I feel like I do have an issue with that. And maybe that's me being, as you get older, that whole cliche of the older you get, the less flexible you become.
Right.
So I do feel that I'm all about quality rather than quantity, at least when it comes to like making friends and expanding the network. But I'm trying to like, I'm trying to shift that for me, because I think that's what life is all about, is, you know, nurturing the relationships. But for myself, like, I need to be open to change. I need to be flexible, especially in today's climate. Now, I mean, not just in from a workforce perspective, and also in our industry and media. I mean, it's like, have you seen this kind of change in the past 7-8 years compared to all previous generations? Like, it's one of the most volatile industries, I would argue. You know what I'm saying? So I would have to, but I understand what you're saying about keeping it tight.
And I also agree with quality and quantity, but also, who am I to say that that person's not quality? I just think that they might not be for me, or at the level of life I am at. You know what I mean? Like, again, I don't relate to a lot of things that are related to maybe 5 years ago. The jokes sometimes aren't the same. Like, I have group chats where I'm like, I'm going to be active today, or I'm not going to be active today, because this particular topic isn't for me. And I don't consider myself a thought leader, but I feel like my opinion is taken too strongly. So some people take it personal, or the law of, like, I'd be like, oh, I think that's stupid. And it's like,
are you saying that happens like on the show or with fans?
In general, just my friends and everything. Yeah. Like, they think like, well, who asked you? And it's like, no, I was just offering an opinion. Like, because I just was like, oh, this shoe's not great. Or, and I tend to like bite my tongue now, because again, people take it so seriously of like how I'm going about it. So, yeah, it's just different. But I don't say that people are quality. Like, you know, most people are like, oh, it's New Year's, I'm going to cut people off, I'm not going to mess with this person.
You guys shut me down real quick when I was like, hi guys, Happy New Year. You're like, no, it's February, Prem, like, no Happy New Year.
I'm just talking about cutting them out your life. You know, people will be I'm getting all these toxic people out. You know, I'm going to go in this new thing. But it's like, we've become so, you know, like, life has changed past 2016. It's a lot of judgment, right?
Yeah.
And imagine, I always tell people, right, I hate the term skeletons and closets, but everybody got them. And it's easy to throw stones and then hide your hand, especially online community. Like, people take pride in whistleblowing now. People take pride in, like, seeing the downfall of others and not realizing the humanistic part of it. Like, again, don't get me wrong, I'm not vouching for, you know, serial killers, rapists, domestic violence abusers, but life happens and people make mistakes. And I think people draw the line in the sand on how they feel about certain things, or you look at how close you are to something and not willing to let it go. You know what I mean? Because, like, think about it. If you're all your favorite musicians or, you know, artists were problematic, now what do you do? Because you've eliminated and you've held your morality to such a high standard to, like, hey, I'm going to cut it all out now. I'm just going to be bored. So now you don't have those conversations with people. You don't have this. And it's like, okay, now when it happens to you, you're turning to people like, but you know me, right? I'm a great person. This one time I messed up. And I just think that the internet creates this false sense of reality of, like, perfect people that have done something that may be passable for public, and then the really bad people. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that we get to that, like, oh, you voted, you're a Republican, so you're a bad person. No.
Yeah.
I think that it gets weird to a point. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that's cool, because I remember avoiding politics at Thanksgiving. That used to be a thing. Now, the decision of people getting vaccines and things of that nature gets even weirder, because it's a tug of war. And I'm not saying, hey, I grew up Christian home, and I remember looking at other religions thinking they were all going to hell because I was programmed that way of, like, hey, this is the way, and this is how it's supposed to go. Professor Steve Smith at Waldorf College told me, you're Christian, right? Now I want you to write a comparison and contrast 36-page paper on every religion compared to Christianity.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said, it's the only way you're going to graduate. And I wrote it. And this was back then, like, where you're sitting in a library and you're getting, checking out books.
Yeah.
The internet really wasn't giving everything. I'm pretty sure I probably could have, if I learned the internet how I knew it now, I probably wouldn't have spent those countless hours in there. But I was reading, mm-hmm. and it gave me appreciation of, like, how Buddhism is the same, Shinto is, I mean, Confucius, et cetera. And I left that, and it changed, it blew up my whole world, because I was in such wow. judgment from everything to, like, now, hey, what I've been kind of taught was a lie, kind of, you know what I'm saying? Hmm. Or, like, I'm going to make it my own way. Like, yes, I'm a Christian or I'm spiritual, but I'm going to adapt some of this stuff, or I'm going to adapt some of this stuff. Cause it's like a lot of hypocritical stuff, in Christianity sometimes. So I look at the same way as how I look at the online presence, and people, I've talked on many platforms about this, and I don't want people to, like, get confused and be like, oh, I'm co-signing problematic things. No, but also I look at cancel culture, like, once you get canceled, you got freedom. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, because now no one cares, and you can say whatever you want. You can listen to whatever you want. And I think people just want to be liked and not be judged. But, like, imagine if you was never judged, or you're judged out. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't care what he does. He's canceled. So now,
yeah,
I think that's the true freedom. Honestly, it sucks, because, again, I do understand why people get these, weave these certain people, individuals out. I get it. You're supposed to slap these people on the wrist. But to a standpoint of casting them out of society, I think it's extreme. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, so much of what you said, I'm not even sure which direction
Sorry
to go towards.
Sorry for getting heavy-winded, too.
No, don't apologize. I think it's really interesting, because I think you're right. I think a lot of it has to do with social media, about our drive to want to put people in a box. That's what stereotyping is, right? Our own biases and everything. Like, that's how our mind naturally, I've learned in school, is how it works. We like to put people in a box because that's our way of organizing our personal experiences. And it's also in some ways like a protective layer. It's like, okay, if I put this person in this box, I might know what to expect from them. They are a quote unquote good person or bad person, whatever. I feel like social media has driven some of those things. But a couple of the words that I wrote down when you were talking was just like humanistic, judgment, evaluation. And, like, I feel like all of those values are obviously, like, so in line with the show in terms of just showing the humanistic side of sport. Mm-hmm. I've been on that trend. And then judgment, just taking away the judgment. That was the whole aim of this show, is whoever comes on, it's all about taking away the judgment and creating a safe space for all of us to talk about their own stories. And then the reason why I wanted to bring you on and have just a general discussion and maybe have a wing person was because there's always topics out in the sports world, right, where I think it's important to address. And so I wanted to kind of go towards that a little bit and talk about things that are topical. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's obviously that so many people are talking about is just the Tom Brady retirement point 2.0, I should say. And if it's going to stick around. And I know your background, you used to be a ball player, and you're, you know, most of what you do is in the basketball space. But I think we could talk about this, because you know so many athletes who try, who step away, who retire, who struggle as well. But I'm just curious about how you feel about this. And I don't want you to hold back on your opinion, but just a general thought of how you feeling about how he's walking away from football and kind of what's transpired over the past 18 months. And I'll share my opinion after yours.
I totally get it, right? I mean, I know a lot of people were like, oh, he's retiring again. I think you want to approach every situation without regrets as an athlete, especially if your body allows you to, right? And he's had this, like, killer diet this killer mentality. He's been able to do it for 20 plus years, which is kind of unheard of sometimes. He's playing to 45 years old, which is a blessing in disguise. Like, most of the time people don't think that way. And he's, you know, invested enough into the sport, enough to prolong his career to that situation. And again, I don't even think he really wanted to continue to play last season. But, you know, with his big moment being spoiled, he just couldn't allow it. Also, there's a thing of, like, camaraderie, like, when in sports, like, one of the guys, like, not saying that going home and being a family man is bad, but it's an unfamiliar world. I compare it to, like, getting out of jail. If you've been doing a 10-year sentence or 20-year sentence and you come home to a new world that has advanced technology and you have never touched these things before, you are going to be shock valued. Everything is going to feel like the earth is going 100 miles per hour, you know? Mm-hmm. So now finally, you know, his retirement video this time was a little bit more believable because you can see he wanted to get it over with. He didn't want to be critiqued in a situation of that. He just wanted to hurry up and handle it. But you can see towards the end of the video, the emotions start to flare in. The truth starts to kick in that this is the end. You know what I mean? Like, and although you go to the Hall of Fame, you have this great career, et cetera, it's just that final saying goodbye to something you've been doing your entire life. You know, it's considerably the athlete's death, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure you faced it during your playing days. I faced it during my playing days. Mine was a little earlier because at 27, I had a series things of injuries. But I don't think I was ever on the path to greatness. I was just fortunate to be able to continue my career post-high school, collegiately, and some professionally. And I looked at it like, for one, I'm not having fun anymore. Two, my body is not enjoying this. Three, this feels like work. It is no longer fun. And I think that's the thing that fans sometimes that have never got a chance to, like, prolong it. Once it becomes no longer fun to you, you need to walk away from it because you adapt some bitterness to it. You adapt some hate to it. You cannot enjoy it as being away from it. You cannot enjoy it as coaching or applying something to it because it becomes personal. And I felt that way for a long time before I could jump back into it. I didn't watch NBA games. Yeah. I had to, like, fall in love with it by teaching little kids. You know what I mean? Like, I was a school teacher and I was just like, the pureness of this is because kids who are very raw and just want to have fun, I'm okay with coaching it. I didn't care about the wins or losses. I didn't become competitive in that situation. It was mainly like, how can I give back to this sport that gave so much to me? But then how can I, like, not bring the competitiveness to it? I don't want to be competitive anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So in Tom Brady's situation, he now has to accept the life of, you know, I don't have a lens inside his home, but now being a full-time father, now being, you know, do I really want to go know what it feels like to go into a grocery store again? Do I want to know what is it like to go into a bank? Do I want to know if, like, driving a car in a normal, you know what I mean, society? Obviously, he's going to get that love for the rest of his life because of what he done on the field. But not getting ready, getting your body ready for training camp, not preparing for the next week and studying film and something that you've committed to your craft, maybe not taking your diet so seriously. Maybe, I mean, it's so many different factors. Yeah. And then you think about your routine just changing so drastic, you know? And I think personally, I struggled with, like, what will people think about me now that I no longer play sports? What is the next profession will I pursue? The first job I had was UPS. And I'm like, I just went from, like, playing basketball, making money to play basketball. And now I'm working at UPS. And the thing is, but UPS, I was grateful for. My first shift was 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. And I was working with people that had been there for 20 years and they were able to make, you know, with this, you know, career, they was able to provide for their family, have insurance, but showed me true hard work. And sports, not saying that we don't work hard, but being able to get up, being able to, you know, have a work ethic, it put a whole new perspective of like, oh, I thought I worked hard because, you know, I took yoga and I got extra shots up and I would shoot for 2 hours and then I would go play in these runs and then I go shoot for 2 more hours and then I would shoot 1,000 shots and I would practice this one move 1,000 times and then nothing compared to like the real work. You know what I'm saying? Like, think about this. You play, you know, you play collegiately, you got, you know, your professionalism in tennis, but like compare it to life as a mom, compare it to life as a student, compare it to a life as trying to put it all together. Which one's harder?
Oh my gosh. Right. Parenting.
And also have to have the mental capacity to have a friendship, to have companionship,
so
to
hard.
Have all these other things be factored in versus a sport where people cater to you. You know what I mean? Like, now you kind of get to escape the real life stuff for a little bit. But now when you retire, life is back at your front door again.
It really is true. It's, you know, when I talk to athletes, so many of them in an indirect, unconscious way talk about how it's a nice escape. And most of them, a lot of them use that actual word. It's like, it's just a nice escape, especially for those who came from maybe difficult background, disadvantaged background, stuff was going on at home. It was their way out, whether it was their house or getting away from school, just general familial issues. It's a great escape. And I think that the thing that I've started to learn as I've combined like what I'm learning in my doctoral training and working with patients. Last year, I was at a college counseling center, and then this year I'm at a VA hospital. So I'm actually at a substance abuse residential program with veterans. And then all the interviews that I've done with the athletes, I think I've started to realize that it's okay. And actually, it's really great for sport to be that escape and to be that vehicle and to be that coping mechanism. But now I'm starting to realize that along the way, especially as athletes become adults, there needs to be that mentorship of like, okay, those things that weren't addressed as children or when we were younger or what's going on in our personal lives, we can't just use sports. We have to deal with them. And, you know, with Brady leaving the game, I think you're completely right. It's definitely a death. There's that old adage that every athlete dies twice. The first occurs upon retirement. And it's really true. It sounds like you experienced it in some capacity. I definitely experienced it. And it was like a death that I was totally unprepared for. I didn't even know it was coming. I didn't know what I was feeling. And I also wrestled with those same thoughts of like, I actually didn't even ask that question of who am I now? It was more like, I am nothing now. My mind went directly to that conclusion, which is not true, obviously. But I think the thing that I feel bad for Brady, and yet I think it's a tremendous lesson. I'm kind of a person of like looking at some of these things and talking about the lessons. So to help educate like what you've talked about, educating a lot of the listeners, hopefully sports parents and other younger athletes, is that I think Brady finally came to a head where his professional values and priorities were now coming at a clash with his personal priorities and values. And success does come at a cost. And it gets really hard as you get older, especially as adult and family and kids, to juggle it all. And I think what saddens me is that his family fell apart. His marriage fell apart and his family fell apart along the way. And I think at that point, it was really too late. I'm curious, like, what you think about just the personal aspect of what happened. And, you know, it's funny, like, I think a lot of sports conversations are centered around the same thing. But I think it's important to talk kind of about the personal aspect, not from a judgmental perspective, but in the sense of like, you can't separate the personal from the athlete, the person from the athlete, because they really influence each other.
Right. I think it's definitely unfortunate because, again, you would like to think both can coexist. But I think it's not only as fans' perspective, our fault too, because we push. And I see it all the time, especially in the NBA, where fans are like, you should be in a gym instead of like doing other things. And I think, you know, this starts when we're young, right? And your parents groom you and they get you a trainer and they say, we're going to be very good at this one thing, instead of allowing you to grow. I don't have any children, but I was a school teacher. And from the school teacher perspective, what the kids really wanted was just to be a kid.
Yeah.
So when you're committed to one thing for the majority of your life, that's all you know. And now you have to learn on the fly those missed years. So when you see guys getting arrested, you see guys getting in trouble for things, you're like, he's an idiot. How did that happen? It's because they're making up for the lack of teenage years in the early 20s and things that normal college students would go about. Like LeBron going to South Beach was compared to his college years. He had been living in Ohio his entire life. Mm-hmm. So to finally get to venture out and live somewhere else and have a good time and actually play with his friends, that was the collegiate part of his life. So when you really think about certain things of like more artists, I mean, more athletes getting into like the music industry, you got people starting creative stuff and they're branching out, but then you still have the fans like, hey man, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? We forget that these people are humans first, you know? You only play a sport. Think about it, like average career span in NBA is 4.5 years, in football is 3 years. So if you're fortunate to play 20 years of your career, think about it like this. LeBron is 38 years old.
That's insane.
He's been playing professional basketball for 20 years. He's been playing basketball since the age of possibly 5 years old. So that means he's been playing basketball on this earth for 33 years. When he decides to hang it up, whether it's at 40 or 45, the average lifespan is 75 to 80 years old. You got 35 years to live non-basketball life. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, are you really, you know what I mean? Like, because you're committing 9 months of the year to a craft. You got 3 months of each year of your life. The past 20 years, think about that. 3 months of the past 20 years, he's had quote unquote freedom, which probably calls training. Yeah. He's out on a trip and he's like, I got to get nap in. I got to go eat this certain way. He has yet to have the fun part of his life. And through this sacrifice, it has made him super successful. But we know there's no real thing as security. You can have all the money in the world. If someone that you love is sick, you can't buy them a new person. You can't, you know, these moments that you commit to your career, it's sacrificing it. You're missing out on great times. So understanding the mental of it, the capacity of breaking it down, you know what I mean? Like, I look at it like, yes, I want to be successful, but what at what cost? What's more important to me at 38 years old? I'm 38 now. And yes, I have my hands in so many things, but I also have to have self-talks and say, Trey, what are you really working for right now? You know what I mean? I don't have any children. The ultimate goal for me is to have a family. You know what I mean? Like a partner.
Is that your ultimate goal?
I think so. Because at the end of the day, that's what we all work for. Like, I mean, materialistic things have an effect on things 72 hours in my mindset. You have the social gratification you get from people. Hey, that's a nice car. Hey, that's nice shoes. I like your dress. After you've seen and you've gotten everything poured into you, you know, and somebody comes to your house and say, oh, you own this? And you're like, oh, yeah, that old thing. it doesn't hold any real value to it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Long term, you can acquire things. You can buy all the things that because you're bored, because you have money, but it doesn't equate to the happiness. Say you lose a parent. Say you lose a sibling. Your sibling's in jail for life. You can't bail them out. Like, these are things that money can't buy. You know what I mean? Like, these are things that we work so hard for that we feel like would make us happy. And solely, like, our brains are wired so chemically unbalanced to a point where we trick ourselves out of position every time. You know, I always joke and say, no matter how successful you are, we all end up on Facebook. Right?
I was not prepared for that.
Yeah. No, and it's true because you want to reconnect with those old people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could be as famous as possible. Well, once you retire, your community is Facebook. You got your old friends. They're sharing things. You probably don't even want to talk about sports. You just want to connect and see, share pictures of your kids, probably connect, get a number from someone and things of that nature. But in the process of all this success, you're ignoring those folks. So it's like, join us on the couch. Finally, here you go. We still love you. We've always loved you, but you know, you've neglected us for all these years and we're still here. You know what I mean? That's the one true social media that is honest. It is one social media that you cannot upstage. No one cares about your verification. No one cares about stories because they went to high school with you. They seen you on your worst days. They seen you on your best days. You know, and they see you now.
It's so true.
They can honestly say, hey, 20 years ago, you had hair. You didn't have any tattoos. You were this scrawny person. You were this very fit person. You know what I mean? Like, hey, how old is your kid? My kid's going here. Maybe I can give you some advice on this and that and the third. So it's unique how that affects things. So I always try to check myself and find out what's so important. And I think it's hard because we all want to, our versions of success is all differently. Like I'm no one to scoff at someone's idea of wanting to be a millionaire, but I say, okay, once you become a millionaire, what's next? You want to become a billionaire? Do you want to be a multimillionaire? Like, what is the goal? You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, what else do you want to do? You know what I mean? Like, I think in gratitude is a huge part too that I'm trying to learn. I'm gaining gratitude living in New York City. Growing up in Los Angeles is Groundhog's Day. Weather's the same, you know. We got beaches everywhere. Hollywood is a backdrop. You don't think of these things until you go other places. I went to college in Iowa and I was like, oh, I can't wait. Like, it's snowing for 8 months. It was snowing for 6 months. I can't wait to get back to LA. You know, I live in New York City. It's cold right now, but when it's 50 degrees, people are out on their stoops. They're playing music. We're appreciative of good days. You don't get that everywhere. You know what I mean? So like understanding like the idea of being able to start a pot of coffee, to start a pot of tea, to drink clean water, like perspective. To have two working legs, you know what I mean? To have a right mind. You see people constantly in New York City with mental health problems. That probably were successful, probably had great jobs, and then something just happened. And now it's like we ignore them and we don't help them. And I would never end up like that. It just takes a blink to end up like that. You know what I mean? Like, because life is hard. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that we just don't. You know, and people have mental lapses. I'm grateful to be able to afford therapy. You know what I mean? Some people are like, therapy's not for me. Well, it might not be for you yet. But I think everyone needs to have that person that they can talk to, because if I just talk to you or Maze, or I talk to a friend, you're probably going to coddle me and give me something to make me feel better because you're exhausted of me being sad. Versus someone I'm paying that, you know, is going to be like, I don't know you and I'm not trying to be your friend, but this is what I'm hearing.
Yes. It doesn't get any realer than that. Yeah. People think that going to therapy is all about getting advice, and it's really all about Like, our jobs is not to offer advice. I operate off the mindset that the expert in the room is a client. My whole job is to basically hold up the mirror and be like, this is what you're saying, and this is what you're feeling and your position. And what do you see in that mirror? Are you okay with that truth? And I think that's like the part of it that's so hard, but so rewarding and special. The Facebook concept is really hilarious because you're right. I don't go on Facebook, but if I'm talking about like my original crew, my original social media community. I mean, those are people that have followed me since I was like a reporter who bombed in Miami, actually in North Carolina, started out in North Carolina when I was making $8 an hour as an intern and then sports reporter, news reporter. And then I made the jump to Miami. Oh my gosh, did I bomb on my first day there, calling the Dolphins' first preseason game. They also saw me go through, I was engaged prior to Ben, my current husband. And I went through that whole thing publicly. They saw me get laid off from Miami. They saw me get me laid off from ESPN. Like, they've just seen the worst of it. And it doesn't get any more real than that. But you're right, though. There is, in essence, like, I think that what we're talking about is just authenticity and really trying to figure out where happiness truly lies. And sure, we're getting into a philosophical conversation here, but I think it's really important because I think the Brady context, I was actually listening to The Daily with Pablo Torre, and he was interviewing Seth Wickersham, one of ESPN reporters who's followed Brady for a really long time. And he was talking about the recent docuseries interviewing Brady, and Brady had kind of mentioned, he was talking about his kids. And Seth had mentioned that there was a quote where Brady was like, you know, I really hope that my kids follow their passions and do something, find something that they love. But I think I took it to the extreme. And for him to kind of point that out was really honest. And I think it showed just like a flash of maybe some guilt or regret in terms of, I think particularly maybe it might be with his marriage. I think it's especially relevant with his kids. Like, you lose that time with your kids and there's really no turning back. And I think that probably hit home for him. But yeah, like I'm curious about what you think, you know, because with athletes, I think it's really easy and understandably so to get wrapped up in that, what some of the athletes have talked about, how they feed into that external validation, the validation from the money and the contract and the sponsorships and the fame and walking out onto the court or field. And you get that fandom craze. Like, there is nothing like it. But then a lot of them also talked about that emptiness afterwards. And also how they realize that when they're no longer an athlete, it is the relationship that immediately stops not only loving you, but thinking about you. And I'm curious about what your thoughts are about that. And also maybe some of your friends or colleagues that maybe have talked about that.
Yeah, I think it's something that you don't think about when you're active, right? Mm-hmm. And for example, one of these players I was around, I think it was like year two, and people were crowded out, just wanted begging autographs. Hey, can I get the autograph? And I'm like, I know it's annoying, but enjoy it while it lasts because this will stop. You know what I mean? Like, it's like being an old toy being tossed in a toy box. Yeah. You know, it's a new toy coming sooner or later. So you have to enjoy the moments when you're loved, but then also appreciate the lives you impacted during the time people loved you. You know what I mean? Like, what footprints did you leave on their hearts during the time when you had their attention? And it's very rare because, again, the battle of it, no one thinks that it ends. Athletes sometimes feel it's eternal. It's like, I'm going to be here. You know, I'm going to be playing. No, this love is going to never stop. You know, I see guys from the 90s And I get excited more about them than the actual current players because I just didn't get a chance to have access to them when I was a kid, you know, versus now I know everybody under the sun, you know what I mean? But it's also, I see them as humans. I don't see them as, you know, these superstars or these people that, you know, and more so as watching a fellow AAU high school teammate, Darrell Wright, transition, right? When he retired and he was going into media and he's been head coach at Donda, coaching for Kanye West's high school. And then now he's back in the media. And it's like understanding that transition of like, okay, NBA is gone. I don't expect anyone to stop me unless I was like, you know, he's a member of the 2006 Miami Heat team. But he didn't have such a huge role. But in that part of Miami, he's going to be forever, hey, you guys were great. In other parts of the world, it's going to be like, can you introduce me to Steph Curry? You know what I'm saying? Because they were teammates. So you have to understand it. Like, or it's like, why is people going up to say hi to him? And it's like, he's tall, but what is, why? You know what I mean? Like, because those are the things. People just want to, you know, the interaction of it. So I'm sure it's an ego hit. But once you kind of swallow your ego or destroy it and you just kind of accept how life is, the easier it is to transition. So I think like how you mentioned with Brady and things, looking in the mirror and the honesty of like, hey, learn from me. Although I accomplished these great things, I missed out on my family. I've potentially in the public eye have, you know, severed my marriage, not saying that I won't be happy and I won't be able to continue my life, but understand what's important to you. If you have a family, do understand that if you're going to be successful, it's probably going to cost you your marriage. You know what I mean? Like, not saying that, but like, there's times where you have to choose one or the other. You know what I mean? Like, I've never been married before. You're married right now, but I can understand. Like, I was listening to, it was a documentary, The Defiant Ones, and Jimmy Iovine's ex-wife, I'm a creative. And she was saying that Jimmy would lock himself in the room and she knew not to knock on the door because, you know, this comes with the territory of marrying a creative. They're crazy. They have to, because their head, you know what I mean? Like they have to, you know, noise.
I'm laughing because I do that because we both work from home sometimes. And so this is my office and Ben is one of those that will be like, sorry, Maze, to my producer, but that was actually, you know, and I have now started putting a post-it on there where it's like, hey, writing, text me. But to your point though, we have to be careful about like really those boundaries and what seeps into our personal life and our priorities. And for me, you're right. It's the marriage and the family. Like at what cost?
Yeah. It's like at the end of the day, when you're retired, successful, who is there for you when the smoke clears? And I think mentally we're clouded. You see it just, it's crazy. That in your background, it's a silhouette of your family. What's important to you, right?
Yeah.
Right. Think about that. You're working right now and the silhouette behind you.
That's true.
Is the most important thing. You get what I'm saying?
I do.
But that's what it looks like when you're working hard. They are faded in the background.
Oh, my gosh, Trey. Oh, my gosh. That's so true, though. That's really sad.
It is sad. But again, you feel like you're doing it for them. And that's how our minds work sometimes. We feel like, you know what? I got all this time in the world and they'll understand that I'm doing it for them. But it's like, are you doing it for them? Or are you doing it for yourself? You know what I'm saying? So like, these are the things, you know what I mean? Like that is going to be a battle. Not saying that if you hang up off this call and you're like, you know what? that hit me right there. Maybe I need to slow down this and that. No, because that's not how life works. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. yes, I still have this goal, but maybe I cut down an hour and add this little bit more time of it. I didn't think of it that way. You know what I mean? Because I even go so yeah. hard. Like, I text my mom, but I don't call my mom. I don't call my grandma. I call my grandma once a week. But I'm like, should I be calling more? Should I make another trip out west? You know what I mean? Because I'm so hyper-focused on work.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm doing it for them. When they wouldn't care, regardless.
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't I really care do. Regardless. Like, you're going to be a winner in their eyes, regardless. Like, Ben's not going to be like, all right, I want a divorce because you didn't accomplish this. You know what I'm saying? Duke's not going to be like, hey, I don't want this. You know, you're not my mom because you didn't do this.
No, it's so true.
You know what I mean? We've created these expectations for ourselves, but also, what are we doing it for? Who are we doing it for? Does it matter? You know what I mean? And in Brady, to get back to Brady, did it matter? Because fans, yes, we love you. We think you're the greatest of all time. But the most important thing, you're rich. But you can't buy another them. You can't buy the time back. You know what I mean? His kids are, he got a kid that's going to high school, I think, or middle school.
Yeah, he's got three of them.
Yeah, like I said, you dedicated majority of their lives to your career. You can't buy that time back. Now they've invested all the time to mom. They feel like mom, they're of age now to know what you chose. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. you could throw it back in their face and say, well, you're living this great life and this is how it happened. But like, they could be like, I don't care. Here, take it all. We'll never talk to you again. So it's choices in these things of like, you know, I think it's even harder when kids are of age and understand it. You know, I always used to joke with someone talking about the Uncle Dad syndrome. Are you familiar with that term?
No. What is that? Like a dad that's not around?
So the dad, it's visitation stuff. Mom has to take the kid to school. Mom has to deal with the bad stuff. Mom is the bad cop. Dad is the good cop. So when you go see dad, it's always fun. But when you get of age and you have to have these conversations, mom was always there. Mom was at a parent-teacher conference. Mom was at all my plays, all my games. Now it's the reverse. And I always tell my friends with kids, if they're split with their partner, do understand you're woman and you have most of the responsibilities, you're a real winner of this deal, you know, because dad is, you know, letting you eat ice cream late at night and it sounds fun, but when it's really important and I need you, where are you at? Not saying that, you know, males are like absent fathers, but to the point of like, if you're not, you know, divorces happen in real life, but like, if you're not if you can't be mature enough to have a partnership to make it work, you're going to miss out the important stuff, which Brady has missed out on. So now dad shows up at the door. Hey, you get to stay with me this time. Meet my new girlfriend. And it's like, all right, dad, whatever. I'm going to stay in the room. I'm going to be on my phone the whole time. And now he wants that attention that he solely missed out on.
And once those relationships are fractured, or once that trust is lost, like, it's really hard to gain it back. And even I have no idea what his relationship is with his kids. It seems like, I don't know, it seems like on the surface it could be fine. But even if he were to reengage with the kids' lives, some of these things, that absence, his dedication to football, it may actually emerge 5, 10, 15, 20 years later as the kids become adults and you realize it's like, right? I'm sure you've probably experienced some of those things about when you go back in therapy or when you're in therapy and you're talking about some of these, your past and your childhood, you're like, wow, I didn't realize that actually bothered me, you know, and you begin uncovering some of it. But firstly, every time I sit on my Zoom, I actually just recently, Maze knows, I recently rearranged my office, but I will never look into the camera and on a Zoom meeting ever again, the same ever again, because now I will always think about what you just said about mm-hmm. my family in the backdrop. But I think the Brady narrative really, I connect with it and in a very sensitive and like emotional way. I can't figure out the adjective, but because I see some of myself in what he did, in the sense of that was very much a part of my tennis journey, where mm-hmm. I was, I focus on sport. I went to a tennis academy. My family, you know, my parents weren't divorced, but they separated so I could pursue that. I had to leave home. So there are a lot of sacrifices. Like I had changed my entire life and childhood basically to pursue that. It happened again with broadcasting. I basically poured everything into that. And then here I am getting my PhD. And I noticed it with the help of my therapist and actually Ben. I was talking about those Ben. And so I suppose the moral of the story is that maybe we might take this opportunity to reflect on our patterns, and we can also learn from each other and also maybe learn from somebody like Tom Brady and to enjoy his all that he did for the sport and celebrate his successes. And at the same time, also walk away with some lessons that it's a good reminder that to really consider and remind ourselves about the things that matter in life, not what society tells us, which is like the materialistic stuff and the fame and the money, but the people. That's basically what it boils down to. So thank you for ruining that artwork behind me. Because that's Ben got me for Christmas.
I know, like, but no, I think Ben was trying to remind you what matters. There you go. And the placement is so perfect.
Yeah.
But this has definitely been an amazing conversation. A lot of perspective.
Yes. Thank you so much, Trey, for coming on